Blog Talk Radio.
Videos and sunny, 87 degrees here in the swamps. We welcome you inside Studio 2. We have called the Manicore to talk about everything that's happened in this crazy run in the National Basketball Association. He's coming up in mere moments. Next week is the Open Championship, the British Open, the event that so many who are born in Europe want to win. We will have lots of preview coverage of that next week. We're also going to talk some music next week. I haven't talked music on here in a while. Dustin Johnson was your winner at the Bridgestone Invitational last week on the PGA Tour, the World Golf Championship event. And Jason Day collapsed, made some really odd mental decisions down the stretch, especially on 16. We'll see what bearing that has going forward. Very unusual for him. And in the opposite field event, Greg Chalmers won his first start in 386. Won his first event in 386 starts, breaking a long streak of coming close but not getting over that hump in the PGA Tour, though he's won a bunch back in Australia. So that's the golf story. No PGA Tour event this week because of the Greenbrier Classic cancellation. There's the Scottish Open to lead us into the Open Championship, the 145th Open Championship, which we will talk about next week. Coming up next here on Teeing It Up, we have Kyle DeManicourt to talk about the NBA. This, Teeing It Up on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Here's Bob Costas.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA's been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA's doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Joining us on Teeing It Up to discuss free agency in the National Basketball Association is Kyle DeManicourt. Kyle, have you calmed down from the aftershocks yet?
I mean, I don't know if I can calm down after all that. I mean, there's still a long way to go, too, with a lot of guys on time.
I mean, heck, by the time this airs 5 hours from now, I don't know, D-Wade could be playing for the, you know, I don't know, Bucks or something for all we know. Who knows? Let's start here. When you woke up July 4th, okay, and I'm not sure what time you woke up or what state, you know, you woke up in. You know, some people can think clearly immediately after waking up. Some people like me, it takes about 15 minutes. Did you honestly think there was any chance Kevin Durant was going to the Warriors?
No, absolutely not. I read the night before a bunch of the, you know, Broussard and Stein and all them tweeting about, you know, it was kind of down to the Thunder, Warriors, even Celtics were in the mix, but, you know, most had believed that he would just return to OKC on one of those, you know, one-on-one type deals. And then, you know, when you wake up, you said July 4th, and you see that kind of news, you're almost in a state of shock. I mean, it sent, you know, shockwaves throughout all of basketball and everything. You know, people were frantic about it. Twitter blew up. I mean, I think the Players Tribune website where Durant posted his article, I think it crashed for a little while. So I did not see that calling. It was always one of those dream scenarios for a lot of people that, hey, we're going to be Kevin Durant in Golden State, but you didn't think it would really happen. And then when it finally did, it's like, wow, like, did that just happen? You're still in a state of shock.
All right, so we've had very strong opinions. I mean, if you think sports is built with hot takes, then, you know, this took them to scorching hot, you know, burning your skin hot takes. People have called it weak. People have called it cheating. People have called it the worst possible decision, the worst moment in the history of mankind. All right, so maybe they haven't gone that far. You know, he's a baby, the easy way out.
where do you fall in what Kevin Durant did by going to Golden State?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, most people killed him for what he did. I mean, I know Charles Barkley today, I think it was, came out and said that it's, you know, it's cheating is a way to get a ring. You know, people forget that Barkley was traded back when he was leaving Phoenix to Houston because, let's be honest, he was trying to chase a ring with Olajuwon and Drexler. So, I mean, I'm not a former player, obviously. I have never been in the league, have no business with it at all, so I don't know what they say. They know more than I do, but me personally, I'm not going to kill him. It's his decision, you know, what he wants to do. If he wants to go win a ring, go win a ring. I mean, look, when LeBron did this whole thing, this whole era started because of LeBron. I mean, when he first joined Miami with these so-called super teams, that started the whole trickle-down effect. Now, you know, Miami wasn't as established, obviously, as Golden State is now. So, you know, LeBron took the heat, you know, both, I guess, literally and figuratively when he joined Miami. So Durant's obviously going to take it now, but it looks a little worse for Durant just because it's like, hey, you just got beat by these guys 3-1. You were up, and they won 73 games, and now you're trying to join him to go win a ring. So it looks worse for him, but at the same time, if that's what he wants, let him go. I mean, who are we really to say what these guys can and can't do?
It's interesting. You know, for me, I think, and this is my guess, that he has inside knowledge that Russell Westbrook's chances of staying are not high. Because if I am in the camp, not that I would say it's weak or babyish or cheating, whatever, but I do think, and LeBron just proved this, that winning in your home or winning when the, you know, climb to the summit was really, really hard, feels better. And that, you know, these super teams winning, yeah, hey, I got my ring, but it's not the same feeling. So my guess is that he has an inkling that Russell is going to leave or will be traded or whatever, and that we'll look back on this in a year and say, hold on a second, maybe he knew what was coming up and the Thunder's chances were not going to be that great anyway. So why not go to the best available team? But for me, my take is more a basketball take, which is I think that people who think that this team's going to go 82-0 or some crazy number like that are mistaken. I really think this team's going to have a lot of problems early on, chemistry-wise. There's a lot to go around. There's a lot of people who need the ball or may not need the ball. And I do think that they're also so good that they're going to be, like you see with, you know, with the UConn women, where they play so few pressure-packed games early on that even if they don't have great chemistry, that they will still win games, and they'll have a lot of fourth quarters off, but there will be the rumblings of, oh, he's not getting enough shots, or he hasn't crested this number yet, or oh, my God. And that just leads to more festering by the media and in locker room areas, and it may be the hardest accomplishment that the Warriors ever have to do. And obviously Durant asked about this and worrying about the chemistry, but I really think there's a second side to this that a lot of people have not thought about, which is I think this could be a really hard year for everybody involved with the Warriors.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we thought, you know, this past year was one of the most scrutinized years for NBA history. Well, you know, just right now, I mean, now we're looking at arguably without a doubt the most scrutinized team in NBA history just because of, you know, what they have and what they had accomplished last year. I think the one benefit for the Warriors is that the guys know what to expect. These guys that just went for 73, they know what to expect. You know, they understand the pressure and the media hype and all that. Now, that said, I agree with you. I think there'll be an adjustment at first. I don't see them completely dominating the regular season like a lot of people do. I think they'll have to get used to playing with each other, especially, you know, having so many guys that need ball to score. I mean, Clay is, you could argue Clay might be their third, fourth option now at this point. I mean, Curry, you could also argue, might be their fourth best overall, like, all-around player. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be an adjustment, and, you know, I still believe it's going to be Curry's team. I think it has to be. We'll see how Durant feels about that, but I think come playoff time, I think they'll have it all figured out, you know, as long as everybody's healthy. I think the playoffs is where we'll really see how dominant they really are. But I do agree with you that it'll be a huge adjustment in the regular season. And losing Bogut, you know, that's a big loss. I mean, I know he was hurt, obviously, at the end of the finals, but he's so good defensively and what he can do around the paint and around the rim, they're going to miss him. I mean, bringing in Pachulia was a steal for what they got him for, especially in today's market. So he'll help, but he's not the defensive presence that Bogut is. So, you know, they'll have to adjust to that. But, I mean, and you look at their lineup, and it's scary good. I mean, there are matchup nightmares at every single position. There's length pretty much in almost every position, obviously with the exception of Curry. But, I mean, they are going to be a force, and it's going to be interesting to see how it handles this kind of pressure.
From X's and O's standpoint, do you think this can work?
I do. I do. I think it will take time. I think the biggest thing will be, you know, who's going to have the ball in their hands more, Curry or Durant. I think Clay is okay with, like, we know that Clay isn't really that playmaker, you know, creator for others. He's going to come off screens. He's going to run around like crazy all game and get his open look. So I think he'll be fine in that regard. Draymond Green he'll still get his open threes, but now he can focus more on the dirty work, doing the little things that, you know, what Draymond Green is all about. So it's going to be just more Curry and Durant getting used to each other, playing with the ball and sharing the ball. The difference with that, with, you know, when Durant played with Westbrook, is Westbrook, he's an alpha. I mean, he's an alpha male. He's a killer. He wants the ball all the time. Curry, yes, he wants the ball, but he's also a very good facilitator. So he's the type of guy that's going to hog the ball the entire game or try to take over stretches with, I don't know, some bad plays or some bad shots. I mean, he'll take bad shots, but he'll make them. So I think eventually they'll get used to it, but in the beginning it definitely will be an adjustment, especially with they're going to have a whole new bench. So they're going to have to work that in as well and try to recreate that depth that made him so good this past year.
Yeah, except for Livingston, basically. It's going to be a whole new crowd, obviously, with them letting Ezeli and Harrison Barnes go. By the way, we know who is still the number one on that team because nobody is making kids faint at camp like Steph Curry. I mean, that video is sensational. If you want to know how much Steph Curry is beloved in the Bay Area, go to the Golden State Warriors Twitter feed because that video is all you need to know about how much he's beloved.
Oh, yeah, it's Steph Curry's team, and I guarantee you when they all met, I mean, I'm sure Durant even told him that. I mean, Durant, he doesn't have that killer personality, that killer instinct that a Kobe or Westbrook, you know, or MJ, so I think that's why it'll work eventually, but again, it will take time, and they're going to have to just handle that media barrage that they're going to get pretty much all season.
All right, let's start to run through these, and let's keep going with this Durant thing, because on draft night, they traded Ibaka for Victor Oladipo, and I'm sitting there thinking, that's a heck of a trade, that's a steal. How can Durant leave this?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. That was, I mean, I can't believe they pulled that off, Thunder. I mean, look, Ibaka had regressed this year. It's no secret to anyone. They didn't really know how to use him. They were trying to hide him a lot on the three-point line, but he also wasn't getting his looks. He wasn't as active around the rim defensively. And you bring in a guy like Oladipo, who's an athletic wing, which is what everybody's been saying for years is what the Thunder were missing. You put him in the backcourt with Westbrook, I mean, that's arguably the most athletic backcourt in the league. Keep Durant stays. I mean, they were loaded. So, you know, that's why everybody thought, hey, why would Durant leave the situation? They were so close last year. Now with what they have this year, they'll be even better. So, you know, you wonder, like you said earlier, if there is something going on with Westbrook. I do think he's going to be gone. I think he's already probably thinking about it, going to leave OKC. But maybe Durant truly didn't like playing with him. I mean, you could say the right things all you want, but maybe they just didn't get along playing with each other, just didn't like each other's styles.
Yeah, but they helped that equipment manager propose to his girlfriend. They all conspired together as best friends hanging out at a restaurant. Come on, they all loved each other. Brothers, everybody in sports loves each other.
Either they really loved each other or they were just really good at showing it.
All right, let's stay in the West. So obviously everybody's got to respond now, and this starts with the Spurs, who got Manu Ginobili back, traded David West, traded Boris Diaw, and signed Pau Gasol.
Yeah, well, the Spurs, look, they're going to be one of the best teams in the league. I mean, they have the best coach in the league. They have one of the best systems in the league. I think, you know, Diaw was interesting, get rid of him, but they had a clear cap space, obviously, for Powell. And the big issue now, the big question is going to be, what's Duncan going to do? Because I know that there were reports that, you know, he's going to be leaning towards retirement, and I hope not. I know he's not as, you know, great as he used to be, but it's still Tim Duncan. I mean, you expect to see number 21 out there for the Spurs, especially with Powell now, how they would work that. But, you know, I still think they need to get a little younger. I don't know how much younger they really got. Obviously, you had Powell, who's, I don't know, what, 35, 36 years old. you know, they got Murray from the draft, who's going to be good but won't contribute a ton this year. So, you know, you're banking on Kawhi continuing to grow and Aldridge. But again, if you look at that Warriors lineup, I don't know how the Spurs possibly can match up with that lineup.
Yeah, that's they need to get younger, and they haven't quite gotten younger, which is the same concern I have with the Knicks, which we'll get to later. And for me, you know, it's interesting because I just feel like the Spurs window keeps getting cracked open, cracked open, cracked open, and I'm not sure exactly what they've done to keep it open.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I love the Pau Gasol signing. I think, but Pau's big on off the court stuff too. I mean, he loves the culture. He loves, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a high IQ guy, not just on the court. So I think it's a good fit on the court and off the court. But again, you know, Aldridge isn't really that quick as a defender. Pau obviously has lost plenty of steps. We've seen that the past few years defensively. So, I mean, you compare them, I guess, to the Warriors, and it's, you know, who's going to guard Durant? Who's going to guard Draymond Green? There's just so many matchup nightmares, especially for the Spurs. We saw it against OKC, their age, you know, that lack of athleticism. I don't know if they really fixed that, but again, look, this is the Spurs. We say this every single year, that they're dying, that this is the end of the run, and somehow they set a record last year. I mean, it's the Spurs. They're going to figure it out.
Yeah, we're talking to Kyle DeMannencore about the NBA and about free agency. It's interesting as we flip conferences here. Let's not flip conferences yet. Timothy Mozgov got paid more money than basically any human on the planet for somebody who does nothing. And I TV money, cap, you know, this wasn't smoothed over. This is all the owner's fault. We know all that. But who cares with where the cap is going? Isn't it just dumb to pay somebody that much frickin' money?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the most head-scratching moves of this offseason, even with all the crazy money being thrown around. I mean, I don't really understand what the Lakers are doing. You know, they've thrown that money at Mozgov. They threw some money at Luol Deng. Look, don't get me wrong, I love Deng. I think he's still got a little bit left in the tank, and he's a great mentor. He'll help those young guys, but, you know, I was thinking the Lakers maybe would throw one-year deals at people and then go for a couple max players next year, which I guess is still possible. I know that Westbrook is hot at the top of their list. But, you know, Mozgov, I don't think anybody saw that coming for what he got, especially how little he contributed this past year. Now, with that said, he's still going to play. He'll play a lot. He's going to start, obviously, in L.A., and he can be a double-double guy, but he's not a game-changer. So I don't know if it was just more of L.A. just had to spend that money to spend it, or they really, truly believe that Mozgov can be the difference maker in that system. I don't see it.
All right, Memphis. Memphis decided, I don't know where, how they woke up one morning and decided, let's spend some money, but they decided to spend some money. And Mike Conley and the other one, Chandler Parsons, I mean, I give Memphis credit for spending money, but I don't know if this is all the pieces they need to start competing.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Mike Conley. I'm a big fan. I would have never seen the largest, richest contract in NBA history, though, going to him, especially considering he's never been an All-Star. But, you know, I like him. He's a good basketball player. And I guess Memphis just felt that, hey, you know, we're going to lose this guy unless we throw this chunk of change at him, and they just couldn't afford it. He's one of the faces of the franchise, so they felt they had to keep him around. And Parsons, obviously, you know, I like Parsons. He got paid quite a bit, but again, like Conley, they're both health risks. They've had some serious injuries in the past. But I tell you what, if they're healthy and if Marc Gasol can stay healthy, it's a pretty nice threesome that they have going there with Conley, Parsons, and Gasol. And you still have Randolph, got some other young pieces. So Memphis is always one of those teams that they hang around. They're just not quite at that top level, though.
DeMar DeRozan stayed in Toronto. As we now flip to the East and start looking at teams trying to compete with Cleveland, Toronto obviously was there, and it pushed him for a while. And we know how big that fan base is and what a special environment that is. Cleveland, though, I mean, everybody's just going to be compared to Cleveland. Is that in and of itself enough for Toronto, or do they need to do something else?
No, I don't think it's enough. I think, look, DeRozan earned the money. He deserved it. He's loyal. He's drafted by Toronto. You know, we all thought he was going to L.A. for sure, but he took the money, and props to him, and he must believe in the system that they have in place there. But no, I don't think – I honestly don't think Toronto got better. I mean, they lost Biombo, which, look, I know he had a great playoff run. He didn't do as much in the regular season, but he's a force. I mean, they're going to miss him. And I know they drafted a couple big guys, but still, you lose Biombo, who's kind of their emotional guy. That's going to hurt. I don't think Toronto really got that much better. I just don't think there's any team close right now, really, to Cleveland in the East.
No. And I think that's I think that we're staring at more Cleveland Cleveland Golden State NBA Finals. The Knicks, a trade for your boy Derrick Rose. Derrick says, "Oh my God, Noah, come with me, come with me." And then they sign Courtney Lee. They get back Lance Thomas. They sign Porzingis' BFF. The Knicks have made some nice moves that are actually acceptable, understandable, and won't make fans scream.
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks are interesting. They obviously bring in Noah Q, who's, you know, Rose's boy, and he's friends with Carmelo. I don't know, I think, and I could be wrong, but I feel like the Knicks management is just trying to sell the fans more on name than value.
Maybe, yeah.
If you look at that starting lineup, I mean, obviously Rose can walk after this year, and Melo, I think, about, what, 1 year deal left. So it's one of the more injury-prone starting lineups that you're going to see in basketball, just between Noah, Rose, and Carmelo. I mean, let's be honest, one of those guys is going to miss significant time. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's bound to happen. And then, you know, Brandon Jennings is a nice value piece off the bench,
yeah,
but like Rose, he's a very inefficient player, not a great shooter, high turnover rate. So you got a lot of pieces. I love Courtney Lee. I think he's a good fit for that team because he's not a selfish player. He doesn't really need the ball to be effective. So I think Knicks fans are going to love him for the energy, him and Noah bring especially. I mean, Knicks will have a ton of energy this year compared to the past. So you just hope that all these moves, it'll be interesting to see how they all mesh together, especially if they run the triangle. I don't know how that'll work, but the key will be, can they continue to develop Porzingis? Do you hope that bringing in all these guys is not going to stunt his development? Because let's face it, the whole point is to develop Porzingis. He could be a perennial all-star. So you don't want to stunt him, and you want him to continue to grow. But the Knicks, they're going to be an interesting team. They're definitely going to be a much-improved team, for sure. But enough to knock off Cleveland, no.
Yeah. What did I want to say here? Yes. Jeremy Lin in Brooklyn. Not that I think the Nets are any good or any close to getting any better. But that, I thought, was one of the better player-team-fit signings.
Oh, you're right. He was one of the better value gets, too. I mean, his contract is very favorable, especially considering this market. So, yeah, I love Lin going to Brooklyn. I think it makes a lot of sense for both parties. He just likes playing in New York. I mean, I think Jeremy Lin will say he doesn't like the spotlight, but I think he does like the spotlight. So
yeah.
I think it was a good gift for the Nets, but again, like you said, they're still a ways away from being a contender.
All right, two guys who tend to end up in the news for the wrong reasons. One of them is now a Bull in Rajon Rondo, and the other is a Hawk in Dwight Howard. Atlanta seems to me to be a team that. That will be a perennial 3-4 seed and basically not going further. And Chicago now is obviously in a huge rebuilding mode around Jimmy Butler. Your thoughts on those two deals?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. I think, look, Dwight Howard, wherever he goes at this point, I think he's more of a cancer than he is anything to his team. I think he got paid way more than he deserved. But again, that's the market value with today's league. I think Atlanta peaked a couple of years ago. I think their better years are behind them, obviously with Teague and now Horford gone. And I know they've been actively looking to trade Millsap too, so I'm not buying Atlanta, selling them actually quite a bit. As far as the Bulls, you know, I was surprised by the Rondo move. I didn't think the Bulls would really make any splashy moves this offseason other than the trade of Rose and letting Noah and Powell go. But the thing I like about the Rondo deal is it's only partially guaranteed the second year, so they're not really throwing a ton at him, you know, and I think he can fit well in that system. It's just going to be interesting to see how he fits with Butler, you know, personality-wise. I know Rondo needs the ball in his hands, and so does Butler. So I don't think, as a Bulls fan, I don't know what Bulls are thinking as far as what direction they want to go. I think they don't even know what direction they want to go, which is a scary thing as a fan. But, you know, if they were somehow, some miracle, were able to land Dwayne Wade, and I know it's not going to happen. I think it's all smokescreen again that Wade usually does. I mean, that would be a huge coup for the Bulls. But again, like you said, they're middle of the tier, maybe back end Eastern Conference playoff team.
Anybody else, any other team, anything that you want to point out besides the fact that Evan Turner may have signed the worst contract in sports history?
Yeah, I mean, props to Turner for getting paid. I can't believe Portland threw that kind of money at him, but hey, in today's league and today's the cap and everything, if you can get paid, go ahead and do it. I like Horford, obviously, to the Celtics. They've been looking for a guy like that. But again, I still feel like the Celtics could have done more. I think with all those assets that they had, you still feel like they're so close, but they're still like another piece away from being that elite team. But other than that, again, with the East, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be Cleveland rolling through most likely, pending, barring a significant injury.
Talking with Jared Dubin here on Teeing Up. All right. So now it's time to sorry, Kyle DeManicourt. I don't know why. I was literally looking at Jared Dubin's list of free agent signings, which is why
I wish I was like Jared Dubin.
He put together a very nice collection of all the signings, which is helpful when you're trying to run through 5 days worth of signings here in a quick show. and now I'm totally off my game. See what happens? You just totally. Oh yes. All right. So as people know, Kyle's going to be with us a bunch in August for the Olympics. Is the Warriors lineup better than any U.S. Olympic team lineup?
Oh no, I'm not going to go that far. I mean, if you look at even the Warriors lineup, I mean, what, three of those guys are on the Olympic team? So, no, I'm not going to go that far.
Okay, all right, so you're not that crazy. Okay, because some people are saying this is, oh my God, the best in history. Are you comfortable saying today on July 6, 2016, on Teeing It Up, that we are looking at a Cavs-Warriors NBA Finals next June?
Barring a significant injury, yes. I am fairly confident that that's the NBA Finals matchup that we'll be looking at next June.
Syracuse has hired ESPN programming and production executive John Wildhack as their new athletic director. You're somebody who's obviously followed Syracuse, having grown up in that area forever. Was Syracuse in need of major change like this?
Yeah, I mean, if it betters the program, obviously, and, Syracuse has some issues in the past with academic issues and, disciplinary sanctions and everything like that, then sure. I mean, whatever helps the program grow and to build, I'm all for. I don't know a lot about him. I just know he worked at ESPN for a long time. So, and now they're saying that Boeheim might stick around a little bit longer, I guess, with the new AD. So who knows? But if it helps the school, helps the program, helps the reputation, then I'm all for it.
Speaking of Jim Boeheim, do you think the fact that Melo keeps signing up for these Olympic teams because Boeheim's right there and they can hang out and, like, catch up on life?
I'm sure it definitely helps that influence that Boeheim has, but I just think Melo likes to win. I mean, he's not really used to losing until he got to the NBA, so, he likes winning, and I can't blame the guy, but, hopefully at some point maybe he'll get it done in the NBA.
And final question, and this is because Jay Shell has to ask odd questions anytime you're on the show. Will there be a game this year, when both are healthy, that Seth Curry outscores Steph Curry?
Unless if the Warriors go up about 30 in the first quarter, then it's possible.
I saw a tweet over the weekend that if the Mavs could have signed certain people, they could have gotten the exact same lineup as the Warriors in name.
Yeah, they're missing a Thompson and a Green, and there are Thompson and Green free agents out there. So.
Yeah, which is nuts.
Yes.
It is. The name game in the NBA is an interesting one because, who comes across, Curry's in their life, and then they, there's two Curry's in the NBA, obviously from the same family, but still, you get things in sports that don't happen in any other walk of life.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it's such a diverse league.
Did you safely protect yourself from a JPP over July 4th?
I did. There was no fireworks for me. I have a firework off-limit zone. So.
Good. Kyle, thank you. See, we never even got to the draft, because this is what happens when free agency happens. Just so much stuff happens, we can't even talk about other things. Or actually, maybe we talked about the draft last time. I have no idea.
It's been a long month of NBA stuff.
I've been hosting so many different shows and so many different topics with so many different people that my head's in five places. But this is what I wanted to say. A month from today, August 6th, is when the Olympic men's basketball tournament begins. So you basically have about 3 weeks to enjoy not talking to me on this show.
Well, maybe I'll get some kind of list together like Jared Dubin, and I'll build my reputation a little bit more by then.
Kyle, thanks as always for coming on Teeing It Up.
Thanks, Jeremy. It's a pleasure.
That's all for Teeing It Up. We'll see you right back here next week. Take care.